南無妙法蓮華経。南無妙法蓮華経。Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Hello, how are you? I hope you're feeling fine. I hope you're secure. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. I don't know why I feel like I want to do something different this morning. I don't want this channel to be boring. It is a resource study channel. That is the goal of this channel and the website and the bookstore. And of course, get yourself a mandala at cafepress.com/gohanzon. But I guess I just want to start out today by saying Buddhism, and I'm just another Buddhist trying his best to practice correctly the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha. It can seem like it's always work. This is so hard. There's so much effort. I have to do this every day. How long do I have to do this for? Ugh. It seems that way. Not always, but some, yeah. And it is. It is. You know what? Life. Life is hard. I'm not the first to say that. Certainly, living life well is hard. It requires stamina. It requires another word for stamina, which is very Buddhist, is endurance. Things arise, endure, and decay constantly. That is the nature of all phenomena. Plain and simple. But, you know, there's a lot of joy to be experienced in that. We have to remember, we have to remind ourselves that there's tremendous joy in discovery. There's tremendous joy in working through. There's tremendous joy in the utter ridiculousness of our samsaric perceptions. We have to learn to laugh. I mean, really laugh. I don't mean laugh at, you know, somebody asked me once why I don't like the Three Stooges. It's not that I don't like the Three Stooges. It's just that there's this, I don't know if it's, I think of in Buddhist terms, the world of anger and animality and the competitiveness, the comparativeness, the ego, how easily bruised, the whole slapstick aspect of life, I've never found to be all that enthralling. It's this one-upsmanship. Look how stupid you are. Look how not stupid I am. It's complicated, right? And yeah, sometimes it's just funny to watch somebody walk into a wall. But I think that kind of funny is a stress relief. I think that kind of funny is like, oh, better that person than not me. Not me. Oof, I've almost done that. Or I've done that, but I don't want to admit it. But that's a great shocker when it happens. It's a release of stress and tension. So in that way, I guess that's what I want to remind us of. When you're so samsarically stressed, and you're going to your mandala, your butsudan, and your namo myoho renge kyo. What is causing you so much anxiety? And maybe there's an opportunity in there when you're looking at it and you're thinking about it. It's utter ridiculous. It's utterly ridiculous. What am I so hung up upon? Why doesn't that person understand me? Why won't they understand me? It's so important that they understand. No, it's not. Just bust out laughing. I learned to do this innately, I think, in my youth, as I was quite rotund and easily made fun of in school. And I'm not whining about all that. What I'm saying, though, is that at some point, I got tired of being angry about it. I got tired of feeling bad about it. I got tired of crying about it. And I started thinking of those who were insulting me with the delight on their face, not because they were insulting me, but because they got such a great reaction in me. I'm destroying this person. And I thought, how ridiculous are you to get such great satisfaction out of destroying another human being? Man, you're stupid. And then it made me laugh. Oh my gosh, am I doing the same thing? Or is it really just legitimately so stupid? Not only stupid that they were insulting me, but that I was so ballistically reacting to it. I'm taking whatever cliches, taking the bait, or whatever. They're really just really saying something incredibly enlightening about themselves. They're not saying anything about me because they're not seeing me, the human. They're seeing me as an object of ridicule. And obviously that points out what they're all stressed out about, or their misconceptions of the world, or their egomaniacal. It's all stupidity. It's so funny. Find a way to laugh, especially about the things that seem to affect you so deeply, because that's funny. That's really funny. Come on. It's funny. Okay. That's the big Uncle Sylvain lesson for today. I guess I succeeded in doing something different today. Whatever that's about. All right. The Hokke Shu Yosho, a treatise on the essence of the Lotus Sutra. And we'll see. Maybe it's laughter. Let's see. Just really, I want your practice. I want all our practice to be enjoyable, to be fun, to understand that what we're uncovering is nothing new. It's always been there. How did we miss it? Thank goodness. Namo myoho renge kyo. Right? I don't want to miss another moment. Introduction. It is believed that Nichiren wrote this treatise at Mount Minobu in Bunei 1274. So about 8 years before his passing. I don't know why I keep referencing his passing, but I don't think we contextualize his lifespan in Japan much in study. And so bear with me, please. The original manuscript is kept as a treasure at the Hokkekyoji Temple in Chiba, Japan. So, still extant. In the second month of the year, Nichiren was released from Sado Island and returned to Kamakura. So, as we've already discussed and read, Nichiren's many persecutions. I mean, Nichiren talks about it as validation for his mission, and we talk about that quite a lot in the through the discussion of the writings, right? But one aspect we don't talk about a whole lot is that those events where they set him up to be beheaded, when they sent him and exiled him, expecting him to die. These were profound. Imagine yourself being persecuted this way. These are profoundly self-questioning moments, time periods, yeah? Somebody puts you in isolation in a place where they expect you to die. What are your thoughts every night as you go to sleep, if you can sleep, when you finally get to sleep? How much introspection do you do? You're there by yourself. How do you continue? What does life mean? What does your life of study mean to you? How many times did Nichiren burst out laughing in the middle of the night? We don't know. And believe me, I'm not belittling any of this, but I'm simply pointing out that these were times, extended time periods of intense meditation, introspection, analysis, consideration, shaping of from feeling a responsibility to outright a mission to accomplish something in the face of, against, within the forces around him in his life. How many moments have you felt this kind of confrontation at this level? I don't know. Maybe some of you. Yeah. So they release him and he goes back to Kamakura, the big city, the situation of government. And Nichiren is more resolved than ever. Not what the expected result was from the shogunate, right? But he's had this time in isolation to like, I'm doing it. I'm doing it all the way. And I feel completely justified. Not what the Kamakura shogunate expected, right? So on the eighth day of the fourth month, he was summoned by the shogunate and questioned about the Mongolians, when the Mongolians were expected to invade Japan, and about his convictions. Okay, we sent you to Sato to die. You didn't die. You still maintain that you know better than all of us. So tell me, Nichiren, how do you feel about the Mongols invading Japan now? What does your conviction in the Lotus Sutra tell you, Mr. Nichiren? And so Nichiren tells them. Not what they were expecting, yeah? Realizing they would not accept his advice, Nichiren withdrew to Mount Minobu, where he wrote this treatise revealing the essential teachings of the original Buddha, Shakyamuni, instructing his followers that salvation or enlightenment for people in the latter age of degeneration would become a reality through these essential teachings. So he doubled down. He basically told the shogunate, till you get your head out of your butts and stop practicing these pretenders and practicing Shakyamuni's teachings correctly, then you're going to invite all of this calamity to yourself, to the country, to the people of Japan. Oh, they're going to invade. You can be sure of that. And so the shogunate like throws up its hands and goes, you're incorrigible, Nichiren. We can't do anything with you. Get out of here. And so Nichiren goes, they're not going to listen to me. It's inevitable now. They're calling forth the environment around them to crumble. They won't listen to reason. So for self-protection and the ability to continue to espouse, because now at this point, hell, they could show up tomorrow and take him back out to Sado Island. He's not sure what could happen at this point. There's only one thing he's sure about, and that is the teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha and the Lotus Sutra for self-practice, and that these other schools are charlatans driving the country into the ground with their baloney. So how can I survive long enough to make this message clearer than ever before and not get myself shot, beheaded, sliced up, whatever? So he takes off and goes to Mount Manobu, a scarcely populated, proper word? Anyway, not very many people, hilly, mountainous region, difficult to access. And he hides out Mount Manobu, finds a little shack, sets up camp there. And the first thing he does when he gets there is he sits down and he goes, okay, I'm going to restate the obvious that they, the powerful, the elite, don't want to hear. And I'm going to talk about this Lotus Sutra Buddhism that Shakyamuni gave us. And I'm going to point out how, once again, as I have so many times, this is the answer. This is the way out of so much misery and threat and so on and so forth. In this writing, Nichiren reveals that the Lotus Sutra is the essence of all the sutras, and that the Lord Shakyamuni Buddha is the center of all Buddhas. Sounds like strange language. Translation influences abound here. But the point is that there's only one human man who's realized the full potential of life as a Buddha mind. And as he's teaching all other human beings, all other sentient life in time, timeless time, to achieve the same clarity of mind, the same Buddha, he is, therefore, the center of all Buddhas, our Buddha, because he's the one showing us how to do the same as he did, instantiate that clarity of mind, Buddha-ness, yeah? Pointing out the sins of being unfilial and slandering the true Dharma committed in other sutras and schools, Nichiren criticizes them. Of course, we've heard him criticize them many, many times over. But again, he's documenting this now. Everything he told the shogunate, everything they refused to listen to him to adhere or even try to understand. You know, they've got their habit energy fully intact. They're going to do what they've been doing. We got to power this way. Who are you to tell us we're wrong? They're not seeing the big picture, yeah? He also explains the five-character Odaimoku, the Myoho-renge-kyo, as the great Dharma to save the people in the latter age of degeneration, and reveals the three secret dharmas of the essential section, the Honmon, of the Lotus Sutra, the Honzon, the Kaidan, and the Odaimoku, right? The realization, the mind, the Gohonzon, the doorway, the gate in samsaric mind to open to Buddha-ness, right? That Gohonzon gate, that Hanzon, the Kaidan, I keep looking because I don't want to say it wrong. The Kaidan means the location, the physical apparatus that provides for the emergent property of mind to perceive Buddha-ness, which is why we have a Butsudan. It's a stand-in for all of the universal physical reality we're experiencing. Locally, it's our body that provides an apparatus, I call it all the time, for the emergent property of mind, that is the ninth consciousness, all the consciousnesses, but certainly the ninth. And that Hanzon ability to perceive that ninth consciousness, yeah? And how do we awaken in this apparatus, that perceptive and therefore maximal expression of life in mind? By invoking it. How do we invoke it? Myoho Rengekyo. Namu Myoho Rengekyo. That's the law. That's the function. That's the methodology. Maintaining that the widespread false teachings of Buddhism are the cause of strange phenomena in the sky and natural calamities on earth, three disasters and seven calamities, right? All of these expedient means. Nichiren decisively concludes that the continuing disasters and persecutions of Nichiren are omens of the Odaimoku spreading widely and superior practice Bodhisattva appearing. This is where he makes the allusion to that personage, the leader of the Bodhisattvas of the earth, one of the four superior practices Bodhisattva, Jogyo, right? He identifies with that mission. He identifies with that personage and that function of his life. He's not an incarnation of. He is completely dedicated in the manner of this personage, this fictional character with all of its characteristic traits. He is living it out as Nichiren. Yeah? So he declares that there is no doubt about the establishment of the three secret dharmas and the spread of Myoho Rengekyo far and wide all over the world. So that's the introduction to this document. Now you have an idea, the circumstances, the contexts, and the impetus for Nichiren and where in isolation he sat in order to consider this treatise. Yes, another treatise. And this one is on the essence of the Lotus Sutra. So if we ever had any questions about what's the significance of the Lotus Sutra in Shakyamuni's entire body of teachings, well, Nichiren, our contemporary scholar, is going to lay it down. So here's Nichiren. As I contemplate the sutras and commentaries on them transmitted to Japan from India via China, are said to be more than 5,000 fossils, according to the Kaiyuan era catalog of Buddhist scriptures, or 7,000 fossils, according to the Chenyuan era catalog of Buddhist scriptures. From those sutras and commentaries, it is difficult for one to form one's own opinion about which is superior or inferior in quality, shallow or profound in doctrine, easy or hard to practice, or the order in which they were preached. When one tries to learn from scholars and doctrines of various sects, there are so many different opinions that one can hardly make a right judgment. So he opens with a paragraph that's very inclusive of all the people of Japan, even the elite. Okay, I'll grant you, he's saying. With all these competing schools, many of which who claim foundations of masters from centuries ago, with their traditions and their mudras and mantras and their chanting of certain Buddha's names and all of these things, it's hard amongst all of these educators, these teachers, these scholars, who one gives credit to simply because of their stature, or by studying them deeply, it's hard to untangle a real consecutive or a clear path through the teachings. What comes before what is the summation of what came before or after? We're just trying to be good Buddhists, and not all of us are scholars. So okay, I grant you, it's not clear. But behind that, he's also saying, I've spent my life studying all of this, just like other scholars like Tendai and Dengyo and so on and so forth. So please, as at the same time as he's saying, I understand why there's confusion, he's also saying, but I might be able to help here. So let's see how he continues. The Kigon sect, so in typical Nichiren fashion, he's going to say, okay, I understand why there's confusion and why you may not be able to get the big picture. So let me illustrate in the many ways that people are misinterpreting the big picture. But I'll take it apart to validate that I know something about these different sects and what they're maintaining. So I'm not just talking out of my butt, right? And you're free to agree or disagree with what I'm saying about these sects, but he's going to pretty much nail it, right? Because he's done it so many times. So the Kigon sect maintains that the Flower Garland Sutra is the most excellent of all sutras. Fact. The Hoso sect holds that the Revealing the Profound and Secret Sutra is the best. Already, just like Christians in the United States or Canada or Muslims, well, all over the world, we're not so, but there are cultural centers around certain kinds of religions in the world and thoughts, right? So that's why I said United States, because it's very much under the auspices of the religious right, yeah. But there are many other religions here, so I apologize if I oversimplified. Point is, when we learn that there are different shades of being a Muslim or being a Christian or being a Jew even, right? Because some are very into the Kabbalah as an advanced teaching. Others don't know shinola about the Kabbalah or even the religion, the Hebrew religions in themselves. So there's different degrees and there's different shades of everything. But doesn't that right away conjure doubt? Is the message the same? Why is the message different? If it's a truth, then why are there so many different, are they different colors of the truth or different truths? Right? Doubt reigns supreme. So he's talking to the Japanese people, the elite down to the lowest class. And he's saying, these sects, even if you didn't know it, as a Qigong practitioner, or the basis of the belief system of your teachers is the Flower Garland Sutra. And if you're a Hoso sect, then the basis of the teachings are around the Revealing the Profound and Secret Sutra. If you're part of the Sanran sect, they insist that the Wisdom Sutra is supreme. So what's going on here? And the Shingon sect states that the three principal sutras of the Great Sun Buddha, consisting of the Great Sun Buddha Sutra, the Diamond Peak Sutra, and the Sutra on the Act of Perfection, are primary. The Zen sect says that either the Entering the Lanka Sutra or the Heroic Valor Sutra is best, but at other times they insist on a special transmission of Dharma without words or letters. The Pure Land sect holds that the Triple Pure Land Sutras are the most suitable to the ability of the people to understand in the latter age of degeneration, our age. The Kusha, Joitsu, and Ritsu sects declare that the four Agama Sutras and their commentaries and precepts are expounded by the Buddha, but Mahayana Sutras, such as the Flower Garland Sutra, the Lotus Sutra, were expounded not by the Buddha, but by some non-Buddhists. And others have other opinions. So he's illustrating that these many schools are not just different opinions about the same thing. That's key. They all sound like they're about the same thing. They all claim Buddhism. But in fact, they're going by entirely separate teachings within the Buddhist canon, certainly. But because they focus on those certain teachings, they're not giving you the full picture. And whatever they're filling in with their opinions on top of that, that's not Shakyamuni. That's these particular teachers. So there's a whole lot of room for opinions and doubts as to what's going on here. Isn't Buddhism a singular thing? Isn't the purpose of Buddhism to enlighten our own minds and attain Buddha-ness? How can there be so many flavors? How can there be so many disparate teachings when we're all trying to achieve the same thing? Odd. Let's go on. The founders of those sects are Tu Shun, Qi Yin, Fat Sang, and Cheng Quan of the Qigong sect. Xue Cheng and Zhen of the Hoso sect. Chia Xiang and Dao Lang of the Sanran sect. Subhakarashima and Vajrabodhi and Amoghasvara Vajra of the Shingon sect, Dao Xuan and Qian Xian of the Ritsu sect, Tuan Luan, Dao Chou, and Shan Tao of the Pure Land sect, and Bodhidharma and Hui Qiu of the Zen sect. They're all saints and wise, and are well versed in the three stores, the Tripitaka, of sutras, precepts, and commentaries. Those are the three stores, right? Their wisdom is as bright as the sun and moon, and their virtue sways all the world. In addition, as they founded respective sects based on three stores And with firm proof, the entire nation, from kings and ministers to the people, firmly believe them. Okay? This is the history of scholarship in these sects that believe these separate avenues of Buddhism, even outside of Buddhism. I don't know how that happened, but hello Zen or Chan. Even if a man who is lacking in knowledge criticizes them in these latter days, nobody puts credence in him. It's just their cultural realities and they're not easily swayed, right? It is very regrettable, however, if you pick up only rubble and rocks when you are on a mountain of treasures, or gather poisonous eranda in a forest of fragrant sandalwood. So no matter how harshly people condemn me, I will scrutinize their assertions to adopt or reject their doctrines. My disciples should carefully study their teachings and doctrines. Interesting. He's shifting a little bit. He's identified all these different forces in society of Buddhism. And now he's saying, now, all of you know how harshly I've been criticized. But even then, even so, I have the humility to investigate, to scrutinize their assertions, to adopt or reject their doctrines. I will look at their teachings, at what they say are the accurate teachings of Shakyamuni Buddha, with an eye towards scholarship and humility. I will see if maybe they're right. And if they're right, then I will change my mind. If they're not right, I'm damn sure going to let you know. But I will be humble about it. And if I don't think they're right, I will give you ample proof to show why and how I came to that conclusion. This is Nichiren, Bodhisattva Superior Practices embodied in Nichiren. Yes? And he's cautioning his disciples, if you're uncertain about me because of what's happening to me, you do the same. You investigate as I investigate and see if you can't draw the conclusion of which is superior and which is not, which is correct and which is not. Yeah? Same exhortation that Shakyamuni gave us all. You need to know for yourself. Nobody can give you Buddha, push it into your brain. Clarity comes from your mind. And the only way you get clarity is by investigating. So he continues. Some of these founders of Buddhist schools themselves refer to sutras and commentaries in the old translations, translated before the Tang period, without consulting those in the new translations. So he's talking about time periods of scholarship. And time periods of scholarship focused on time periods of Shakyamuni's teachings. Right? Hinayana, Mahayana, Provisional Mahayana, so on and so forth. This wanders all over the place until Qi Yi in 6th century China reorganizes everything in its proper place. This has been roiling around for centuries and picking and choosing. Kumarajiva himself, several centuries before Qi Yi, had the same conundrum, finding all these translations and groupings. You know, the chapters of the Lotus Sutra, sometimes there were 27, sometimes 28, sometimes many more. Somebody had to go through and go, okay, this is obviously belongs to this grouping of sutras, chapters. This obviously does not. Let's get that out of the way. This is obviously an interpretation or a copy of this one, and it's not as reliable. It has a lot of personal notes in it that don't jive with Shakyamuni's teaching, right? Somebody, a scholar, had to really go through all of these translations and adopt some that were easily validatable and push others aside. Maybe they existed on their own in other groups, but they weren't part of this, right? This is the history of Buddhism. And obviously, during certain dynasties in China, there was a big shift from an accepted canon to a revised and cleared canon. This certainly happened during Qi Yi's era when he confronted the schools in the north and south of China after public debate was found to be far superior in his understanding of the canon of Buddhism, and all of these other schools had to go to kowtow to him and go, yeah, we're following your canon. You are obviously far more intuitive and understanding and correct in your classification of these and eschewing these others that don't belong. Right? The scholarship of Buddhism. Others, on the contrary, read them in the new translation only, abandoning the old translations, or attached to their own sectarian prejudices. Some add notes to sutras and commentaries to suit themselves and leave them for posterity. This is that corruption of the teachings, yeah? They are as foolish as a man who keeps on watching the tree stump into which a rabbit crashed and died. In contrast, a wise man, reminded of the true shape of the moon by the apparent roundness of a paper fan, abandons the false idea of a paper fan and grasps the truth of the moon. So this is obviously from a folkloric story at the time, but you understand the meaning. Now, ignoring false ideas of later commentators in India and mainstream interpreters and annotators in China and Japan, I devotedly open the fundamental sutras and commentaries and see that all of the sutras expounded by the Buddha in 50 years of teaching, the most important teaching, is expounded in the Teacher of the Dharma chapter of the Lotus Sutra. Not even a particular sutra, but a chapter of that sutra. This is where his most fundamental teaching rings out. Declaring that all of the sutras preached in the past, being preached at present, and to be preached in the future, the Lotus Sutra is supreme. These are Shakyamuni's own words. So with all of this other that I've said, all of this other that I've demonstrated that I understand, Nichiren now says, look, Shakyamuni made it perfectly clear. You need have no more doubt. You need to understand with humility that these teachings that Japan has had been nurtured for centuries from these other schools are incorrect. I'm not correcting them. Shakyamuni's corrected them. I'm just telling you what Shakyamuni said. What proof do you need beyond this? It is his teaching that you're practicing, is it not? Then why would you contradict his teaching? Makes no sense. Right? Scholars of other sects must have seen this statement in the Teacher of the Dharma chapter. Yeah, this is where Nichiren rubs a lot of people wrong, right? So he not only points out the answer is here, it's been here all along. You've been misled. But now he goes after him. You've been misled intentionally. These people are evil. Now, you really should be angry about following them. Stop following them. He's spelling it out, isn't he? Scholars of other sects must have seen this statement in the teacher of the Dharma chapter. Or are you saying they're too stupid? What are they? Why are they your teachers then? However, they do not correct their false ideas because they are perplexed with similar statements and sutras they rely on being attached to their masters' false ideas, or afraid of losing the support of the king and his ministers. Now we're getting to the corruption. Similar sentences are, for example, this is the king of the sutras in the Sutra of the Golden Splendor, so they can latch onto that. This is the most excellent of all sutras in the Sutra of the Pure Land of the Mystic Glorification. Dhananipitaka, a collection of mystic spells, is the most important in the six Paramita Sutras. A quote, enlightenment is to know the true character of mind in the Great Sun Buddha Sutra. This sutra is the most difficult to believe, but the truth lies in it. In the Flower Garland Sutra, there is no truth but the ultimate reality of all phenomena expounded in this sutra, in the Wisdom Sutra. Wisdom Paramita is of prime importance in the Great Wisdom Discourse. Or this doctrine of the Nirvana Sutra is superior to the Lotus Sutra in the Nirvana Discourse. These are similar in meaning to the statement in the teacher of the Dharma chapter of the Lotus Sutra, of all the sutras preached in the past, present, and future, the Lotus Sutra is supreme. So Nichiren is laying it out, right? These sutras, however, are the king of sutras compared to the sutras expounded by such as the king of the Brahma heaven, or Indra, and the four heavenly kings, or compared to Hinayana Sutras. It's a relative thing. They are supreme of all sutras when compared to such as the Flower Garland Sutra, the Srimala Sutra. However, they are not the great king of sutras compared to all the sutras of Mahayana and Hinayana, expedient and true, and exoteric and esoteric teachings expounded by the Buddha for some 50 years of his lifetime. In other words, you should know how superior or inferior something is according to the object of comparison. Ah. Clean, fresh water is superior to muddy pond water. But it's not superior to the medicine you need for your illness. It's not superior to, but vitamin water. Pick your comparisons. This is what Nichiren is saying. A sutra might say it is the foremost, but you have to consider what it's being compared to. Oh. Yeah, so that statement, though it sounds similar or the same, you have to put it into context. Buh. How often do we make that mistake? In other words, you should know how superior or inferior something is according to the object of comparison. It is the same as knowing how strong a man is by the strength of the enemy he defeats. Besides, superiority of those sutras is decided solely by Shakyamuni Buddha, and it is not supported by the Buddha of many treasures and Buddhas in manifestations in the worlds throughout the universe, as the Lotus Sutra is. Do not confuse a personal opinion of one Buddha with the public announcements in the Lotus Sutra, verified by the Buddha of many treasures and the Buddhas in manifestation all over the universe. So again, this is about the expedient means and understanding how to interpret those expedient means. That if I tell you this is superior to all things, but I'm the only one who's telling you that, whereas on another day I tell you this is superior to all things and all of the Buddhas of the entire universe, in other words, Buddha-ness in its entirety, agrees with and validates that this is the greatest, well, that's a much more important statement, a much more inclusive statement, yeah? So that's just by using the story. Those sutras are either Hinayana sutras expounded for men of the two vehicles, and ordinary men, or Mahayana sutras expounded to such bodhisattvas as Manjushri, Vimuktikhandra, moon of emancipation, and Vajrasattva, diamond being, who practice the bodhisattva way for themselves and others. They are not expounded, as is the Lotus Sutra, to original disciples of the eternal Buddha Shakyamuni, bodhisattvas who sprang up from the underground, such as superior practice. In other words, the teaching for all time. Comparing the Lotus Sutra to all other sutras, we can list 20 points to prove that the Lotus Sutra exceeds all other sutras preached in the lifetime of the Buddha, Shakyamuni Buddha. Of the 20, two are most important. They are the two doctrines of 3 and 5. 3 means the Buddha's act of teaching for over 3,000 dust particle kalpas expounded in Chapter 7 of the Lotus Sutra, the parable of the magic city. Sutras expounded before the Lotus Sutra state that the length of the period when the Buddha practiced the Bodhisattva way was either 3 asamkhaya kalpa, a long period of exceeding a dust particle kalpa, or innumerable kalpa. In those pre-Lotus Sutras, the great king of the Brahma heaven claims to have been under are the ruler of the Saha world for 29 kalpas. So do other beings such as the king of devils in the 6th heaven, Dharagutenomau, Indra and 4 heavenly kings, making it unclear who began ruling the Saha world first, Shakyamuni Buddha or one of those heavenly beings? However, since Shakyamuni defeated devils by pointing his finger up toward the sky, the great king of the Brahma heaven bowed to the Buddha. The king of the devils put his hands together in Gassho, and people of the triple world, realms of desire, form, and non-form, all took refuge in the Buddha. Understand, these again are talking about the great stories of the sutras, right? And simply by looking at the meaning of those stories, he's making the point. So again, he's taking it away from particular teachers, and he's demonstrating that the teachings themselves obviate this point. Understanding, as you and I might, that the... where is it? Magic City. The world's... Oh, come on now. The realms of desire, form, and non-form. The triple world. This is our discussion of formations. The inertia of those formations. And then the forms from those formations. The non-form is the formation, the energy, the kinetic energy, the momentum is the desire, and the form. That equation where energy becomes thing, that's the triple world. The acknowledgement that the world is a created thing, a construction, yeah? When we compare Shakyamuni Buddha and the Lotus Sutra to the Buddhas and the other sutras with respect to the period of practicing the Bodhisattva way and saving people, other Buddhas Length of practice is said to have been 3 asamkhya or 5 kalpa, while Shakyamuni Buddha has been a great bodhisattva planting the seed of enlightenment in all living beings in the Saha world since 3,000 dust particle kalpas ago, according to the parable of the Magic City chapter of the Lotus Sutra. Therefore, none of the living beings in the 6 lower realms in this world have any relationship with any bodhisattvas in other worlds. It is said in the Lotus Sutra, those who heard the Dharma from those Sramanera teachers are now living under those Buddhas. Tendai stated in the words and phrases of the Lotus Sutra, quote, the Buddha in the Western Pure Land is different from the Buddha in this Saha world. Therefore, no relationship between parents and children exists between the Buddha of infinite life and us ordinary beings in the Saha world. Right? We've read that quote already in one of the previous sutras or Gosho I was reading. Miao Luo explains in this in his annotations on the words and phrases of the Lotus Sutra that the Buddha of infinite life and Shakyamuni are different Buddhas. Their relationships to us from past lives are different. So are their ways of teaching. The Buddha sowing the seeds of Buddhahood in living beings is similar to parents giving birth to a child, and the Buddha guiding the people is similar to parents raising a child. If the parents who give birth to a child and parents who raise the child are different, the true relationship between parents and child does not exist. So again, I'm hearing a lot of fan noise. Again, this is, as I explained last time, we ran into this, and I'm gonna pause here. Shakyamuni Buddha is an actual human who attained this Buddha-ness, this clarity of mind that we all can also do. But these other Buddhas, they're explanatory devices of Shakyamuni Buddhas. They're not actual persons, they're personages. They're examples, they're exemplars of influence, of mental capacity. And they all fall within the description of Buddha-ness, which is what Shakyamuni attained, Buddha-ness. They're all aspects of that clarity. But ultimately, if we want to know all those aspects, all those Buddhas, we do it simply by attaining the same thing Shakyamuni attained, Buddha-ness. So which is superior or inferior becomes clear. Right? Knowing a one recipe really well can feed you for your whole life, but it's not going to give you the entire spectrum of experience of food or eating or satisfaction or diet, whatever. It's just one aspect of a successful recipe. But if you want to know all recipe-ness, if you want to be able to make your own recipe, then it is the Buddha-ness that you need. And you can express your own recipe of Buddha-ness. Much more profound, yeah? All right. Gone on enough for today. Thank you for listening. Thank you, patrons who are supporting this channel. You're invaluable, really tremendous. Your support means everything. And your support in liking and subscribing is bodhisattva work. It helps the algorithm reach more people, which is what study and resources is all about. Get it to more people. Let's get Namo Myoho Renge Kyo into the hands, into the minds of more beings. Thank you for watching. I deeply appreciate your participation. Don't forget to download the podcast. I didn't mention that in a while. And I will see you in the next one. We will continue. Bye for now.